Summer in Sodom. Chapter 11. Ted opened the screen door and walked slowly into the kitchen of the Gables. His mind was preoccupied, troubled by Jerry's remarks. His words had been a plea that Ted could not help but respond to. But still, he found himself unable to crystallize his own feelings. Still, he couldn't decide where sex and empathy were divided, or just how respect and admiration mingled with sexual attraction and the vast complexity of love. He owed Jerry a great deal. He knew how hard it was for Jerry to hold back. He knew the great effort Jerry was making to restrain his actions while he waited for Ted to make up his own mind. Ted understood Jerry's problem well. He was in much the same position with Ian. It was still hard to believe that Ian had betrayed him. He could not forget the hot-breathed words of love that night, the gratified sighs of admiration, the low-throated moans of pleasure. Ian had become a part of him. It had become impossible to think of life without Ian. Ted smiled bitterly. Ian and Eileen. Jerry and Ian. Eileen and Jerry. The multifaceted emotional triangle was too much to cope with. The house was asleep. He stood staring moodily into the kitchen. Through the window, he could see the line of pines, and he could pick out the tree under which he had met Eileen that first night before going into town. The memory of her resilient flesh, such a violent contrast to the hard-hewn male bodies of Ian and Jerry, made him think of softness and understanding, brought back memories of his mother. He wondered if his mother could understand his strange involvement, wondered if he could have summoned up the courage to tell her. He shuddered when he thought of the bizarre things Eileen had tried to make him believe about her. Was it possible that he had inherited this peculiar attraction for his own sex from her? Angrily, he pushed the thought out of his mind. Surely Eileen had been mistaken. He wandered to the screen porch and looked out into the night. A fog was gathering. The lone night light at the end of the pathway was surrounded by a misty halo. The pungent smell of dampened wood hung in the air. With a depressed sigh, he started up the stairs toward his room. He knew that he wouldn't be able to sleep, but it seemed like there was nothing else to do except for try. At the first landing, he heard voices. Voices of two women raised an argument. The sounds were muffled at first, but as he approached the second floor, there was no mistaking Mrs. Coburn's cutting tone. "I suppose you'd like to spend the rest of your life in this town," she was saying disdainfully, "and I suppose you expect me to become a sweet little old lady and spend my old age at the country old folks' home." "That isn't true," retorted the second voice. Ted started. He was listening in on an argument between Eileen and her mother. He shook his head to blot out the sharp voices, and then took a step toward the next flight of stairs leading to his own room. But in the next instant, he heard Eileen's mother mention his name, and he stopped mid-step, wondering how he fitted into this domestic squabble. "He's a nice boy," said Mrs. Coburn defensively. "Last summer I wouldn't pry you two apart." There was a pause. Ted smiled ironically. Her statement was so true. His curiosity was now aroused. He sensed that at last he was able to discover why Mrs. Coburn had become so friendly to him, why she had gone out of her way to push Eileen at him this summer.
"That was last summer," said Eileen. "Things change. People change."
Suspicion was flat on Mrs. Coburn's voice.
"What can change? You're young and good-looking. You look just like I did at your age. When I decided I wanted to marry your father, I went out and got him. It's high time you learn to do the same thing. Just remember that those good looks don't last forever."
Ted's eyebrow raised. Her meaning was very clear. She would be happy to have him for a son-in-law. But he still couldn't figure out why she should become so suddenly attractive, such a likely prospect. He glanced about to make sure there was no one coming, and then moved closer to the closed door. Since he was the person being discussed, he didn't feel particularly guilty about eavesdropping. Eileen's voice was inches away, crisp and clear despite the oaken door.
"I won't go out and deliberately seduce a man. I can't."
Mrs. Coburn laughed long and humorlessly.
"I hope you realize how ridiculous that sounds coming from you, dear. You're hardly a blushing virgin."
There was a long pause. Eileen's voice was ragged when she spoke again.
"That wasn't fair. I know what I am. It's hard enough to live with it.
You could easily forget all about one close call if you had a husband and a child that you could rightfully call your own."
"I don't know if I could. That's what I'm afraid of. I tried so hard with Ted, but he sensed there was something unclean about me. I know he did. He senses that I'm evil, that I'm not quite pure and the kind of girl he wants."
"Nonsense. I can't believe that. Ted is no different than any other man, and a lot less experienced than most his age, I'll wager. If you can't get him, you'll never get anybody. And let me tell you, this town is a poor place for a single woman. I've had my fill of it since your father died.
I couldn't marry Ted for his money anyway. I have to love him.
And you don't? Mrs. Coburn's voice was incredulous. It sticks out all over you every time you look at him.
You love him, all right. I know the signs.
No, my dear, you'll have to do better than that. I've seen the symptoms too many times not to recognize them. For the life of me, I can't think what's holding you back.
He'll be in the city less than a week. You don't have much time left.
I know, Eileen sniffed, but there's nothing I can do.
Has he found someone else? Probed Mrs. Coburn.
Yes, I think so.
Who?
The question was a pistol shot. Ted waited himself to hear the answer. He almost dreaded it, knowing what must come, unable to hear it from Eileen's lips. Yet he stood in agony of suspense.
Ian! He's completely in Ian's clutches. I can't fight it. It was partly my fault that it happened.
Mrs. Coburn chuckled.
Ted Raymond gone queer. Like mother, like son, she marveled. I always said these things ran in families.
You're wrong, spat Eileen. Ted is just as much as a man as anyone. It's that pet of yours, that Ian, who's done this to Ted. He was a setup, an emotional wreck. Ian knew just what to do. I've seen that she-man, that male bitch at work before.
Don't be unkind to Ian, replied Eileen's mother smoothly. He helped you out of a jam, and if he ever tells his secret around town, you'll never find a husband. You'll have to go a long way away, and we can't afford that. You had better be nice to Ian until you have a ring on your finger and another baby inside of you.
It won't be Ted's, that's for sure. You'd better put all those ideas about Buffalo and lots of money out of your mind. He probably wouldn't marry me now if I was the last woman on earth.
But if you love him, you have a duty to him. You ought to try to get him away from Ian and those fan-tailed deviates. Otherwise, who knows what might become of him? You're only torturing yourself. I can understand a daughter of mine unwilling to get in and fight for what she wants. And you do want that boy. I can tell.
Ted looked at the door and astonished. He tried to fit all the fantastic words together in his mind. He could understand Mrs. Coburn's egregious demands. In fact, he was surprised that he hadn't recognized them before. Now that he thought back, the clues were patently obvious. But Eileen's words still rang in his ears. She did love him. She could be his. He thought of her with a new tenderness. Sex seemed to become less important, almost a non-entity, a minuscule fragment of the total feeling of warmth. He wanted to hold her in his arms, feel a deep love grow into a tangible thing, solid, intimate between them. An overpowering mountain of normal love that Ian or Jerry could never shatter. But deep inside, he suspected that it was no use. His body would betray him when Ian came. If not Ian, it would be Jerry. And now he had nothing to offer Eileen. No money, no home, nothing. Ian had already seen to that. More tortured than ever, he moved away from the door. He went outside and sat on the steps. Enveloped by fog, he felt strangely detached. The sharp, ugly outlines of the world were softened. He sat down on the step facing the lake, hearing the low moan of the foghorn on the point, hearing the crash of waves upon the shore. Never in his life had he been so utterly, hopelessly alone. Upstairs, a door banged shut and footsteps ran up the stairs. Behind Ted, the door creaked open. He looked up to see Eileen standing there. Her eyes were swollen and red. He was immediately embarrassed because he had overheard the conversation which had created her tears. Without saying a word, she sat down beside him. The foghorn sang again a deep bass tone. For a long time, both sat there, staring out into the fog, each deep in thought, barely aware of the other's presence. At last, Eileen's voice snapped Ted back to reality.
I haven't seen very much of you today.
Ted shrugged. I was in town.
With Ian?
He nodded. She lapsed into silence again. Ted looked at her from the corner of his eye. Her brown hair was in disarray, dampened, speckled with tiny beads of fog. The jersey clung to the high rise of her breasts and moved with each breath. He could not help but notice the exciting way the material tobogganed down the curve of her stomach toward the wand of her waist. As if she noticed his glance, she moved closer to him, a gentle but persuasive invitation. Ted reacted immediately. He took her hand, felt it chilled and moist in his. With a sigh of pleasure, she shrank back against him. The smell of her moist hair, the sweet scent of her whole body filled his nostrils. He was aware of the girlish softness of her through the thin material. Impulsively, he nuzzled the gentle arc of her neck beneath her ear and felt her move close to him in response.
His hand moved around and cupped the firmness of the underside of her breast, weighing each globe in the palm of his hand. She bent forward, thrusting the nipples hard against his fingertips. "This can't lead anywhere," he whispered. "Maybe we'd better go inside. Sex between us never works out, does it?" he finished bitterly. He remembered her words that night, telling him he would have to be sure of what he wanted before he touched her again.
I don't care where it leads," she replied feverishly. "I just want your arms around me. At least then I know that you're not..."
She bit her lip and stopped short at the realization of what she'd almost said. "You mean that I'm not with Ian, is that it?" She nodded.
"Yes, that's it," she admitted. "If you must have sex, I'll give you my body anytime you want it."
The deliberate, straightforward offering herself stunned him. He looked at her strangely. "What kind of an animal do you think I am?" he muttered bitterly. "I don't want your body that way. I don't want anybody that way."
"Then what is it, Ted? Are you in love with Ian?"
"That can happen, I'm told."
"You seem very knowledgeable. Where did you find out about these things?"
"You forgot. I've lived in a boarding house all my life." "A boarding house in a resort town? Not much can happen anywhere that hasn't happened here."
She lowered her head in shame.
"And some of it has happened to me. I know that's why you don't want me. You think I'm spoiled, that I'm not good enough for you. And you're right."
He felt her shoulders begin to shake, heard her breath catch in a sob of recrimination. He tilted her head up to face him, placed his hands on her shoulders. "You are so wrong, you know," he said, and with deep feeling. "When you're sitting here so close, I want you here, well, forever. But when I'm with Ian, it's different somehow. I feel close to him, too. And Jerry, he's a guy I really admire. Can't you understand, Eileen? It has nothing to do with you or what you've done. I'm just all mixed up. I can't seem to sort anything out. And now I'm really in trouble." Deep concern lined her face.
"It's Ian, isn't it? He's done something to you."
Ted nodded. "It's not really his fault. I can't believe he'd hurt me deliberately. He's desperate himself, I think. And in a way, I want to help him out. I just wish he'd come to me and asked instead of..."
"Instead of what? What's he done?"
Ted hesitated. It had been almost impossible to tell Jerry what had happened. He couldn't find the words to tell Eileen. He looked at her and saw her amber eyes pleading with him, encouraging him. At last he stammered, "One night, Ian and I were in a beach house he knew about. It seems that it was some crazy kind of setup to take pictures." Her face paled.
"That's blackmail,"
she breathed incredulously. "Call it anything you like. I'm still in trouble. I pay up or those pictures will follow me everywhere I go. The Air Force, jobs. There's nothing I can do. If I pay, it gets Ian and me off the hook." Her chin rose defiantly.
"Do you mean you're just going to give in? Go to the police?"
Ted laughed shortly. "Swell. I'm told that nice little law-abiding boys don't do that kind of thing. That, oh, what's the use of talking about it? I'm hooked. I'll pay."
"And then?"
He sighed and got up. "Who knows? I can't figure it out." She stood up beside him.
"Then it's time you found out once and for all. I don't believe that you're gay. I don't believe it for one minute. I think you've been sucked into a vicious trap because you're inexperienced and you're mixed up inside about your mother's death."
She took his arm in one hand and opened the door with her. He allowed her to lead him into the front porch, curious at her sudden boldness, sensing a new determination in her, wondering what she intended to do.
"Stand there," she said.
She moved away from him and stood in profile so that the light shining through the fog highlighted the outthrust peaks of her breasts, shimmered on the seductive roundness of her hips, painted in pagan tones the smooth outline of her long, cleanly tapered thighs above the smoothly rounded calves. With studied casualness, in expert sensual motion, she raised one hand and brushed her hair away from the back of her neck. Her breasts rose. Her nipples punctuated the thin material. Ted stared, awed at the brazen sexuality.
"I'm waiting for you, Ted. I want you. I want your hands to touch me here, and here, and here. I want to taste your mouth. I want the whole body next to mine."
Her voice became breathy. She was becoming excited by the self-hypnotic power of her own seduction. Her arms reached out to him. With a deep sob, he grabbed her, his arms forcing painfully to the iron length of him, lifting her from her feet as his hand burned into her body. Somehow they tumbled to the couch, oblivious to the prickly, dampened wool. The rules were forgotten already. Eileen's hand reached for his loins, found the secret target, caressed him into a fury of desire. Ted swallowed hard, raised both hands to peel the sweater from her. Then his hands were on her breasts, touching her lightly at first, then responding to her hoarse demand.
"Harder! Hurt me, Ted! Use my body! Be cruel and strong!"
He dug his fingers into the taut, warm flesh of her bared stomach, felt the abrupt, shuddering response, felt her legs wrap about him, saw her move to bring her breast close to his face. He plunged downward, nipping at the pale underside of each firm globe. Immediately her hips began to churn beneath him. Low, guttural groans escaped her throat as she began a continuous circular friction. Her legs tightened, holding him captive. She shifted to accommodate him, groped to find him, to bring them together. He gasped again at her touch. He moved back from her, sensed the high moment of expectancy, and then entered her, smoothly and cleanly. For a long moment they lay, savoring the goodness of each other's body. Somewhere, detached from passion, far in the back of Ted's mind, he thought, "She's doing this for me. She wants to prove to me that I'm not gay, that it can be as good with her as it is with Ian. How stupid this all is. I know it can be good, but I can get into a lot more trouble, too. I've got to hold back. I've got to be careful, just as Ian said." Her body rippled beneath him, beckoning. "Now comes the test," he thought. Ted began the motions of sex, his body intrigued by the fluid warmth of her. He allowed the rhythm to increase, warily, measuring his passion against his willpower. Eileen writhed beneath him with utter abandon. Her hips rolled, her arms clenched tightly about him. Her moans increased in pitch and volume. Suddenly, she thrashed about beneath him in a frenzy. She uttered shouts of release as her body soared upward to meet his long final thrust. She gripped him, drawing him down with her so that he felt every muscle in her body tense and contract again and again. Ted moved into her harder, aware that he could not stop now, yet intent upon sensing the moment of his release so that he could escape from her entrapping legs. He waited until the last moment, then suddenly he reared away from her. But her legs wound about him, serpentine, as if she anticipated his intention. Every rock-hard sinew in his stallion body was abruptly swollen with the effort to escape from her, the desperate effort to hold back. A split second of unbearable tension held him, an instant which threatened to rip his body apart. Then her lips bit hard into the corded muscles of his neck, and the explosion came in vast, sweeping waves that rocked both of them into a swirling torrent of warmth and fulfillment. Later, they lay in the dark, listening to the groan of the foghorn, the steady drip of fog from the leaves behind the screen on the porch. Her body was entangled in his. Her breath was warm upon his chest. Her body was smooth and silken against the lean hardness of him. "Do you still think you're gay?" she asked. Her voice was intimate and sweet, a little girlish. He knew what she expected to hear. "There's a world of difference," he muttered. He did feel at peace, but it was the superficial peace that comes after the release of sexual tension. He appreciated the fact that she had drained the tension from his body into hers, appreciated the fact that she had given him her body to dispel his strange attraction for Ian and Jerry. But was she successful? He didn't know. He decided that he wouldn't know until the time came to test once more. This time with another kind of body, and he dreaded that time. Here, with Eileen, there was at least an semblance of security, a feeling of love all around him. He wished that his whole life would stall, suspended forever at this point. But then she sat up. "I'm getting awfully cold. We'd better get to bed." "Our own beds, unfortunately," she giggled. He stretched languorously, enjoying the frank appreciation of his beautiful body evident in her eyes. He felt a stirring once more, but quickly pushed the sensual thought away. She was right. They would both have a cold tomorrow, no doubt, and that would give the boarders plenty to talk about. They walked together into the warmth of the house. At the foot of the stairs, Eileen stopped. "I almost forgot," she said. "A letter came for you today." Clad only in her panties, she bounced into the kitchen and returned, handing him a long envelope. Her breasts pressed into the tight skin of his arm as together they peered at the address. "It looks very official," she whispered. Ted recognized the name. "It's from the lawyer in Buffalo." He opened the envelope and pulled out the letter. He held it so that she could see. Together, they scanned the lines, and then Eileen looked up at him, a question in her eyes. Ted considered for a moment. "That's the best offer we've ever had for the house. More than we'd ever expected. But then it doesn't really matter," he added ironically. "I'll have to give most of the money to Scars and Ian to pay for my sins. Maybe I can hold back some of it myself, but they'll probably find some way of discovering that, too."
"Don't sell,"
Eileen suggested. "Then they'll take the house. This way I may have a chance to salvage something," he frowned. "I wish Jerry was here. He'd know what to do. He always seems to know the right thing to do." Eileen moved closer to him.
"I don't like to hear you say things like that," she pouted. "Now that you've made up your mind, I think you should stay away from him, too."
Ted looked at her in momentary annoyance. He hadn't made up his mind at all. All he knew was that he found pleasure in women, too. That, for once, was the frightening, accusing phantoms of his mother had not appeared. "Jerry said that he had an idea," said Ted. "If he can't get me out of this, I don't think anybody can."
"There is another way to prove to the world that you're not gay," said Eileen.
She stood facing him now. The carmine straps of her lush breasts had awakened. They seared into the skin of his chest and then moved away, bouncing like the noses of inquisitive puppies sniffing the air. "How?" He looked at her curiously, forcibly stifling the flushed warmth that stole over him. Her eyes became soft. Her voice was a whisper.
"You could get married," she suggested.
He looked at her in surprise. For a moment, the astonishing logic jarred him. And then he heard Ian's voice.
"Women just love a man for his body. They want to break him on a rack of sex."
He heard in his mind her mother's words. Her mother's greedy desire to get her hands on his property, to live on his money. "No," he snapped curtly, "that's not the answer." He walked to the stairs and stood there looking down at her with hard eyes. "We'd better get to bed," he said. "Our own beds." Without another glance, he walked up the stairs.